it was the first time I had ever heard that you could get a degree in winemaking. And I said, that's for me.
Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
The wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
To me, the romance is in the glass, and it's when you're done with the bottle.
And we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day.
Even though it's tough work, nobody said it would ever be easy. You know, we do it as a family.
In the final analysis, somebody's going to pop the cork, and they're either going to like the wine or they're not going to like the wine.
Since I made Cabernet all my life at Beringer, I buy Cabernet, so should never let a winemaker own their own winery.
We were either going back to Switzerland to go to hotel school, or we were going to come to California. We had to get closer to the vineyard thing.
It's like when you go to one of those winemaker dinners where the winemaker doesn't quite get that not everyone is telling jokes about the acid level in the wine all night.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 89. This week we feature Elizabeth Viana, winemaker for Chimney Rock Winery. Back in 2010, we recorded a brief interview with Elizabeth Viana, winemaker for Chimney Rock, located in the Stag's Leap district of Napa Valley. This time around, Elizabeth visited the LBTV studios here in Milwaukee. After doing a trade tasting at Coquette Cafe in Milwaukee's historic Third Ward in April, we whisked Elizabeth away to the studio for a long overdue follow-up interview. I have to say, this has been a great afternoon. I was able to have lunch with Elizabeth Viana from Chimney Rock at Coquette Cafe here in Milwaukee, and now we have her in the studio after all these years. Elizabeth, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ray. Thanks.
We were able to sample a number of your wines from Chimney Rock, and for our listeners, of course, Chimney Rock is located on Silverado Trail in Napa Valley, and we're talking Stag's Leap here, folks.
That's right. We're all about Stag's Leap District.
It's a wonderful area, and I have to say, it's not a bad job to be a winemaker at Chimney Rock.
No, I really can't complain. We are, 100% estate grown, so we get to do the farming part. We get to make the wine, and then we get to run around the world and, you know, share it with lovely people like you. So it's pretty well-balanced job.
You're very kind. So, and you're going to be on the road for, what, about a week or so?
I've just finishing a week of travel, yeah, and then back to the vineyard to see how things are evolving at bud break. And we're just about to enter frost season, so I definitely want to go see what's going on.
Does that tug at you when you're gone?
It does. And I'm constantly looking at weather forecasts, and I'm in contact with our cellar crew and our vineyard guys all the time.
You're kind of like a mom in a way.
I am. Got to check on the kids.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So today we sampled four wines, and we had one white and we had three reds, and everything was wonderful. And I'd just like to say that I am being as objective as I can. It's not often I get to drink at noon on a Friday around here. But why don't you tell us about what you're pouring today, if you would, please.
So you tried our 2008 Élevage Blanc, and this is a white Bordeaux-style blend that we've been making for a few years. It's a blend of Sauvignon Blanc and a very rare grape actually called Sauvignon Gris, just kind of a cousin of Sauv Blanc. We're one of three producers in Napa Valley that actually has it planted. And it's unusual for a white wine from Napa Valley because it's actually made to age. So we barrel ferment it, we whole cluster press it, and the idea really is a wine that evolves with time. So we bottle age it for a year or two before it's released to the market, and then we watch it develop, and it's kind of a magical thing that happens in bottle. So quite unusual. It's the one wine that we make that's not from Stag's Leap. Everything else is Stag's Leap. That comes from our vineyard up in Rutherford, which we own and farm as well.
And one of the comments I made about it was perfect for lunch. Great starter, great light, and very tasty.
Yeah. It has great texture. It's a great food wine as well.
When you're saying you're only one of the three wineries that grow it in that area, what brought you that? I mean, how does something like that get your attention?
So I actually am not responsible for the choice. Doug Fletcher, who was my predecessor at Chimney Rock, tasted some Sauv Gris up at Chalk Hill with Bill Nuttall back in the day. and made a mental note of it. And when we decided to do a Bordeaux blend, we really wanted something that would age. Sauvignon in Napa tends to lose acidity a little bit, and we really wanted something that would hold on to acidity a little bit better. So we took a gamble and planted it, and he had heard that the pHs tended to be a little lower with Sauve Gris, and it was a great choice. We have 1.6 acres of it, and we love it. We love it in the blend. It ages well. Really good choice.
Is that a grape that you would harvest earlier then?
You know, it comes just like a couple of days before the Sauve Blanc. So it tends to carry lower yields than SB for some reason, smaller clusters, so it ripens a little bit quicker.
Interesting. It's always fascinating to learn about a new varietal because there's so many.
Yeah, there are. There are.
So, and then we also had the reds.
So you had our Stag's Leap Cab, which is sort of the flagship Cabernet. It's a blend from the entire estate. And that one we really try to showcase sort of the fruit characteristics of Stag's Leap, the beautiful sort of blackberry, black cherry, cassis aromas that we get. For a flagship cap, I use a little bit less new French oak than traditional, really allowing that fruit to kind of sing. So it's meant to be approachable at a young age, but actually it ages quite well. Then you try the red élevage, which is a Bordeaux blend we've been doing for a long time. And I don't know if you know what the term élevage means. It's the raising of a wine like you would raise a child. It's a French term for raising something.
I was going with elevation, so I was wrong.
Yeah, sort of. So élevage is a red blend that we make, and the idea is really capturing the texture of Stag's Leap. So Stag's Leap District is known for soft, silky tannins. And that second blend that you tasted is known for being sort of velvet in the glass and really being the most feminine of our reds. It's very, very approachable. And you had the fortune of trying an 07, which is kind of fun. You get to try a little bit of age on that wine, which also shows beautifully. And then you got to try our Power Cab, which is Tomahawk Vineyard, which is a little vineyard designate Cabernet that we do from the south end of the property. It's cab for the purest, 100% cab from that block, not blended with anything, has a little bit more structure, power, but still conforms to kind of, I think, the themes of Stag's Leap. Would you agree?
I would totally agree. It was interesting, though, the difference, especially between the Tomahawk and the élevage. The 2007 just was amazing.
Yeah.
It was such a pleasant and very, for me, very balanced. And maybe that's an overused word. It just had that hit me perfect. And the nose was, again, just sort of like sniffing Napa Valley.
Yeah. I think we're pretty obsessed with balance at Chimney Rock. I think that a great wine is a wine that's kind of seamless, that where nothing sticks out. And that's always sort of an objective, whether it's a more powerful wine or a lighter style wine. It should always just flow from beginning to end without anything, you know, staring at you in the face. So I enjoy working on balance. It's an important part.
I think one of the things we talked about during lunch was this idea, I guess just like saying before, how much time you spend in the vineyard, but how you still enjoy when you have that time when you're in the cellar. I mean, you are the consummate winemaker because it's about everything, not just a part of it.
Oh, it is. I love every part of it, whether it's stirring a barrel or helping the guys do pump overs or even just being on the crush pad weighing grapes during harvest. I like being in the middle of the action. I got into the business because I wanted to be a hands-on winemaker and don't believe in desk winemaking so much, not for me anyway.
I don't think you could do it on a legal pad. It doesn't quite work that way.
Yeah, no, it's tricky. Could be tricky.
Yeah. And I was asking you, too, about your total acreage for Chimney Rock that you farm.
Yeah, so we've got about 103 acres planted in Stag's Leap, and then we've got our little 7-acre parcel up in Rutherford where we have our whites, 100% estate grown.
Which is, I think, that much more special because there's this focus and, of course, the control that you want. I guess when you get down to it, if you're a good winemaker, you're somewhat of a control freak, right?
We are control freaks by birth, and I'm a Virgo on top of that, so it makes me a double control freak.
Yeah, exactly. I hadn't thought about that. I should have asked you that before. You had mentioned to me that you have a family member who's younger and looking to the idea of getting into the business. And of course, now that you've got some years behind you, that's got to be – it's a dual-edged sword, right? I mean –
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I got into the business about 16 years ago, and I think – the popularity of wine and food in this entire country, I think, is growing still exponentially. And therefore, you have many more people wanting to get into the food and wine industry. So I think it's a lot more competitive. And it was already competitive when I got in, but I felt very fortunate in my path. So, yes, I have a niece who's trying to enter the industry, and although I really encourage her to do what she loves, to really find out what she loves and really test it out, because it is a lot trickier these days.
I would assume, logically, she had to be a wine lover to begin with. I mean, right?
Yeah, you know, it was a little bit. No, she really wasn't a big drinker at all. She had, you know, was a sociology, psychology major in college, and just came out to visit, and in some ways fell in love with the land part of it as well, but definitely fell in love with the sensory part of wine. It's hard not to.
Yeah, but gosh, I would think when you were sort of looking at qualifications for a winemaker, somebody that is in love with the land, for starters, that's a big plus right there.
That is absolutely.
Different approach.
Half the equation, right.
Yeah. It's all about terroir. That's what
it
is.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially in an area like you're with. Do you think she'll be coming to you for tips? You know, it's a family thing too, so.
Yeah. No, she definitely does. And she's very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed right now about it. But she's already worked a couple of harvests, you know, so I think she has a real sense of how physical the work is. She's also, in order to make some money in between gigs, worked in a tasting room. So she's learned actually earlier than I did that you also have to be able to talk about wine and to communicate it to people. That's something you don't learn at UC Davis, I think. You know, they really focus on the winemaking part. But a reality of a winemaker's life is that you have to be able to speak eloquently about what you do and perhaps convey some enthusiasm so that you can get more people to buy your wine.
Well, you do a good job of it because I can see your love for wine. I mean, that's very contagious talking to you. I guess it's got to make you proud, though, in a way, because you're a woman winemaker. There are more women winemakers every day. Napa Valley, certainly that number is growing, and here's a potential one more woman winemaker. That's pretty cool.
I love it. I love it. And I don't have any kids, so my my nieces are my kids. So I would love nothing more than to see her make it in the winemaking business. So I look forward to watching her grow.
Are you involved in any kind of tasting groups yourself? Do you have any people you meet with other than people within the company?
A number. That's really important. Otherwise, you become completely made of a house palate. So I have several tasting groups, actually, that I taste. Friends from, you know, UC Davis and just other winemakers in the Valley. And I think in order to stay calibrated, it's A, important to drink everybody else's wine. Don't just drink your own. And be exposed to other palates and really talk about wine. And we always taste blind, very important. And it's really fun. You know, what you find at the end of the day is you put a bunch of winemakers in a room and there's always going to be one that hates one wine and somebody who loves that same wine. And the discussion is a healthy one. And it's also a great reminder that there's a wine out there for everybody and that they're in some ways, there are no rules, right? I mean, there are wines that somebody's going to love and somebody's going to hate, and that's okay.
Well, another thing I've learned over my travels, specifically in Napa Valley, there are plenty of winemakers that are educated formally, the UC Davis trip, and some that have no education whatsoever other than the real world. That kind of fascinated me.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, frankly, UC Davis laid down a background for me, a technical background. But winemaking is a field that you learn when you do it. Every vintage is different. Having the experience of what Mother Nature puts you through, that only comes with experience. You can't read about it. So I really think formal training for winemaking happens on the ground. That's that.
Like all winemakers talking about the idea of, you know, the wine is made in the vineyard. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And without that tactile part of the experience, that's what you have to be doing, right?
Absolutely. And practice makes perfect, or practice makes closer to perfect, I should say. You know, every year you move closer to making what perhaps your ideal wine is. But it's winemaking is the eternal learning curve. The more you know, the more you realize you have more to learn. And that's what keeps it interesting.
You just gave me a great quote. Thank you very much. I'm going to use that.
You're welcome.
When we sat down here to talk, we talked about rosé, which has become something I'm drinking more of, and a lot of people are. And You know, you obviously enjoy rosé yourself.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, rosé kind of got a bad reputation, didn't it, with, I think, the explosion of white Zinfandel, which, by the way, I'm not critical of at all. Although it is a sweet, you know, pink wine. Many of us started drinking white Zin. I know you did. I did when I was in college. So we all had it at some point. And I think whatever it takes to get people into wine is great. But there's been a real trend for dry rosés. They've really made a comeback. We've been making a rosé at Chimney Rock for well over a decade, a rosé of Cab Franc, actually. We do about 200 cases, and it's a little different style. We actually let it sit on the skins overnight. So it's not that sort of lighter pink salmon-colored rosé, but it's sort of almost jewel-tone red. Mm-hmm. So it's got a little body, and it really will stand up to dishes like turkey. Like, I think it's a great Thanksgiving wine. And it's acquired a little cult status for our followers because they're anxiously awaiting the release of those 200 cases. And I just bottled it last week, and we're already getting phone calls from people who want to get it. So
that's pretty cool when you got people following you for something like that.
It is cool.
But unique with rosé is that there are so many different – I mean, there are people making it from Grenache. They're making it from Pinot Noir. That's kind of the wild card, isn't it, to a
degree? Right. Absolutely. There's so many different styles. There are people who just do sangay from a tank. Some people throw it in a press like we do and rotate the press and let it hang out until you've got the color that you want. So a lot of different styles, and they suit themselves to different foods. They're pretty interesting.
I have to say, I know you have a busy schedule. You've got a number of places to go yet before you head back to the warmer climate of the West Coast, which I'm envious of. But number one, thank you very much for a lovely lunch. Thank you for taking
such
the time to come up here. But for our listeners who would like to learn about you and to learn about Chimney Rock, how would they find out about you online?
They can go to chimneyrock.com. I actually also do Twitter for the winery, and I'm at Chimney Rock Wine. And I'll often post pictures of what's going on in the vineyards, in the cellar, or my travels. So kind of a fun way to hear about what's really currently going on at the winery. And then Chimney Rock has a Facebook page as well, where we try to keep people in touch with where we're pouring our wines and what's happening in the vineyard, all sorts of information. So
who knows, you listeners, that Elizabeth could pop up in your market anytime in the future.
That's right. Coming soon to a theater near you.
Elizabeth, thanks again. Really good seeing you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ray.
Special thanks to Nick Berkey, co-owner of Coquette Cafe, for setting up the trade tasting. Coquette Cafe is located in Milwaukee's historic Third Ward. Learn more by visiting coquettecafe.com. To visit the Chimney Rock tasting room, go to chimneyrock.com. Thank you for listening, and watch for our next program featuring Armin Kachaterian, National Sales Manager for Eller's Estate. Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Our intern is Steve Lance. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2013.